entertainment only. The views and opinions expressed therein are those of the individual speakers and callers and do not necessarily represent the views of KFAR Radio or any of our respective employees, affiliates, or sponsors of this program.
Good morning, Fairbanks. We're on Problem Corner. I'm your guest host, Jennifer Juhas, filling in for David Pruse, who's taking some much-deserved R&R. And it is the first Tuesday of the month, so we all know what that means. Welcome to the Laundry House Gang. We've got Craig Campo, Al Barrett, and Wayne Heimer in the studio with us today. But the first thing we wanted to do was say happy birthday to our governor, Mike Dunleavy. Happy birthday. I know Al just sent you a birthday card virtually. And we don't know what it means that he's born on Cinco de Mayo, but it's a party.
I wonder, how old is the governor, do you know?
I'm sure that's on Wikipedia, but yeah. You know.
older than he was 4 years or three, 4 years ago.
Eight years ago. Yeah. And probably much older than he was a week ago before we were dealing with some of the things we're seeing in the legislature between gas lines and overrides, and that'll age you pretty quick.
Yeah.
Today, though, we're going to focus on Federal Subsistence Board and the overlay of management in Alaska. We've heard Wayne Heimer, our resident grammarian and historian, and what do you call someone who puts forth many, many postulates?
Pain in the neck.
Curmudgeon.
Well, we're all curmudgeons. You see, how do we have the buttons correct? Someone's in here checking.
I think we're good.
Is that what we needed to do? Okay, so happy birthday to Mike Dunleavy. We are here on Problem Corner with the Laundry House Gang, and we forgot to press one button again. So here we were with dead air, which is a theme.
My cue.
Yeah.
Al's cue to text the studio, but we're here on the first Tuesday of the month, so you know what that means. We are here with the Laundry House Gang. We have Craig Campo, also with Campo Outdoors, podcast and radio show. Al Barrett with Santa Smokehouse, Interior Fish Processors, Board of Game, and so many other hats. And our resident grammarian, wordsmith, and person of great knowledge, Mr. Wayne Heimer. We hope to focus today on Federal Subsistence Board and Federal State Management Overlay. There's so much going on right now, and David and I had a really good discussion about this about 6 weeks ago, and then he forgot to save it, so you can't find it online. But we went through most of the history from the formation of the board in 1992, where they had the discussions to form the board. Some people will correct one and say it was not formed until 93. Right, but they were having meetings in 92 to form the board. I still have my binder from that meeting at the Egan Center. And not a whole lot has changed in the fact that it was so advertised on the radio. All these things were happening. And there I was, 21, and headed down there to go see what was happening. And there was three of us from the public. There was about 12 people in the room who weren't sitting at the table, and the rest of them were staff. And, you know, I was greeted, come on in. You know, someone's here of interest. And we still see such a low participation at these meetings for writing proposals, for commenting on proposals. And there's been this ebb and flow. Everyone in this room has been perennially involved. Some of us, Wayne and I, have raised our hands above our head and shouted, people need to pay attention to this. And then they do for a while, and then they just leave it to us again.
If I were a historian, I would start before the formation of the Federal Subsistence Board.
Oh, yes.
Way before. To really get a grip on the history of this business, you have to go clear back. I started with Earth Day, which was just not very long ago. And the tenor in the public was that, we got to save the Earth, we got to save the planet, it's being spoiled. Earth Day and a whole bunch of other things that just sort of came along. That reflected itself in the Congress. And the Congress began to take various actions to protect this and that and regulate this and that. And along with this, was developing the need for an oil pipeline in Alaska. And of course, you can't build a pipeline until you know who owns what. And the folks that want
to. We're going through that again.
Yeah, right, we are. And the folks that didn't want the pipeline got together with the folks that were supporting settling the Alaska Native land claims. And they formed a unity, which led to a resolution in the House of Representatives, which was very restrictive and had a subsistence based on race in that bill. Well, the House passed it because it was a wonderful thing to do, and they felt all good about it. So I sent it over to the Senate, where Ted Stevens apparently read it and said, "This is 1979. We don't do race anymore." And Senator Stevens thought he could avoid that discriminatory approach to providing for subsistence opportunity by amending out race, which was Native race, and amending in rural residents. Well, it's still discrimination against people that don't have preference. And that somehow sailed on through the Senate, and that version of the what became ANILCA was way different than what the House had sent over. It never really went to conference committee where those sorts of things would get worked out, but it contained in the boilerplate a bunch of paranoia that the bulldozers were idling, were about to level the state of Alaska, the state was irresponsible, and oh my gosh, it was just, the sky was falling. So the focus of ANILCA, which is really a land management law, got subsistence introduced into the mix. And the idea was that if Alaska did not provide opportunities for subsistence use, then the feds would do it for us. Alaska did that. We passed the state subsistence law. They passed their law anyway because they could, I think, not because it was necessary.
And the preference was for subsistence as a use, yeah. Not for users.
Yeah, and at that point, things begin to get really hairy. Jennifer just pointed out one little niggle. Eventually, the definition between state subsistence and uses and federal subsistence users got to be a major mountain for legal minds. And so the state was out of compliance with the federal law because we can't discriminate against Alaskans. So in order to force discrimination to provide a preference for rural residents, the feds said they had to take over subsistence management on federal lands. Well, either they had to or they didn't have to. They said they had to, and that legal quibble has been the source of everything since, which includes the formation of the Federal Subsistence Board, and there you are.
There we are. So those quibbles and the definitions, there's a couple of components here. One is the way that it's implemented, which is currently under review. So the Federal Subsistence Program had an open comment period due to a petition by SCI, the Alaska chapter, even though they had some national resources who could write that petition for them. That does get confused. It wasn't some outside organization. It was the Alaska chapter asked for a petition for rulemaking, and many entities commented, AFN, large outdoor groups, many, many individuals around the state. But there has been a consensus that in general it isn't working. People want very different styles of changes. But it looks like under this administration, we may finally achieve some meaningful reform.
Historically, the reason it really didn't work was because we had federal mandate for minimum use and a state mandate for maximum use, and we tried to do co-management when we were 180 degrees apart. That didn't work very well.
And by co-management, you know, that was just agencies, and now that we have such a broader discussion over what co-management means to some of the people commenting, and some of that is integration of entities and tribes in the full discussion where, through the board game process, we have the most open public process for managing our game with public input in America. We're going to go to a quick break, and we will be back with more Problem Corner.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Thursday nights just got tastier at Giraldo's Italian Restaurant. Get your forks ready for their Thursday night spaghetti and meatballs special. Warm up with a heaping plate of classic spaghetti topped with savory meatballs and rich marinara sauce, served with garden fresh zucchini, warm garlic bread, and their signature salad bar. All for just $19.99. So this Thursday, skip the cooking and come to Giraldo's, where every bite is a taste of Italy.
Pump up the volume.
Business moves fast. Orders roll in, deadlines close in. When you ship with USPS Ground Advantage, you can keep up with confidence. Every package stays in our secure network from dock to door. And with nationwide reach, dependable tracking, and upfront affordable pricing, you get built-in peace of mind. You run the business. We run the routes. Visit usps.com/groundadvantage to learn more.
I know that hiring can be challenging. You need someone to match your role perfectly. Well, now you can meet them fast on ZipRecruiter.
Build your team, build it sooner. Meet your match on ZipRecruiter.
Just head to ZipRecruiter.com/free right now to try it for free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free.
Meet your match on ZipRecruiter.
Are you a foster, adoptive, guardianship, or kinship caregiver in Alaska? The Alaska Center for Resource Families is here for you. Whether you're just getting started or need post-adoption support, this statewide resource offers free training, expert guidance, and community of Alaska caregivers. You'll find help with foster parent licensing, ongoing training, and resources for Alaska Native youth and families. Visit acrf.org to learn more. That's acrf.org. Supporting families so every child can thrive.
Weather brought to you by Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing, offering 24-hour service from Salcha to Nanana and no mileage charge on callouts. The Bigfoot with the helping hand. Bigfoot Pumping and Thawing.
KFAR Weather.
Chance of rain showers today, otherwise cloudy. High temperatures reach up to 54. Southerly winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. 33 tonight, chance for rain becoming mixed precipitation. Overcast skies tomorrow. Slight chance for a mix of rain and snow. High temperatures reach up to 45. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Laura Lockwood.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Welcome back to Problem Corner. I think we got Wayne's mic fixed. You want to give it a little test there, Wayne?
Much better.
So much
better. I'm not a meteorologist, but I pretend.
You just play one on the radio?
Yeah.
So before we went to break, we gave a brief history, and we need to give that history over and over. People forget. Even people that are in our circle that are paying attention to this forget. And every so often, the rallying cry surfaces, well, let's just fix it. Let's just change the Alaska Constitution. Let's just make a role preference, and then everything will go away. But that's not the case, is it?
What does it fix, right?
What does it make go away? The board would not dissolve.
The board being the federal subsistence
correct.
Board. The thing that won't go away is equality and access to resources. We will still have discrimination on the basis of something. That's not in the Alaska Constitution. If we want to put it in there, I think that makes us very, very strange, because while we respect all of our fellow Alaskans, their history and their knowledge and their incompetence even, I don't think we want to be in the business of amending subsistence preference or discrimination, which is the ugly flip side of that concept,
into our Constitution.
So that is one piece of the argument, but what about those folks who have gotten so frustrated, who've said, maybe we do, maybe I'm there, maybe I'm fine with it if this burdensome process will go away of having this extra federal board and these racks and these, it doesn't necessarily...
My counsel to them would be, why don't you look at the law and let's just do what it says. ANILCA is pretty obnoxious to many Alaskans, but if we followed the text and the intent of ANILCA, not the perversion of the text and the intent, Alaska could get along just fine. There's no federal subsistence board in there. There's no federal takeover in there. Everything is run through the Alaska system, and it's just grown strangely.
Kind of my take on, you know, potentially changing the Constitution would be that it would make management on a state level much more difficult. You don't have the populations of people that could participate or take a harvest on a sustained yield basis that would keep the health of a population of game out there. You know, a classic one is Western Arctic caribou that, you know, grew all the way up to almost 500,000 caribou, and it crashed because, you know, the habitat ran out on it, and in large part is caribou do what caribou do. But we use Nelchina caribou, for example. Used to be one of my go-to herds until
Same.
It did something.
200,000 down to what, 15,000?
Yeah, but I mean, for decades, we maintained that population on a roly-poly scale because we had the population and the effort of hunters that are wanting to use that resource to take all but 1% of that harvestable surplus. And so that way you could maintain a population without impacting the habitat. And so, you know, it may look really good for people that live in a rural community to have more access, but it would be feast and famine out there. They'd have lots of something for a while, and then they'd have lots of nothing. And so that's one of the hindrances of just a knee-jerk constitutional amendment.
Go ahead, Wayne.
Throughout the course of this whole adventure, you know, there have been any number of bright people that have thought ways to make this work, and having, you know, seen and participated in much of it, it has come to my folksy way of saying you can't amend a sow's ear into a silk purse. It just won't work. And this system just won't work. It wasn't intended. It was a choice by managers, land control managers, to control land through resource use, hunting and fishing. And you know, the land control, I think the last 40 years have shown Alaska wasn't about to wreck everything. We've done okay. We can live with the parks as they are in ANILCA if we must, and apparently we must, because our congressional delegation has given us no relief at all. And they still don't. And why would they? Because a bunch of folks like it the way it is. And it's hard work.
I see part of the you know, we're educating some newer folks to this whole thing, and talk to some very, very highly intelligent people who have become ingrained in this, and they've started their education process, and then they eventually get to the point of, now wait a minute, what if you amended the Constitution? I say now you're on the right track, because it's part of having to get there so that we can come back and say, feel, felt, found. I understand how you feel. I felt the same way.
Yeah.
Here's what I found. It goes back to that, like Al was saying, the difference between, you didn't say these words, but in theory versus in practice. In theory, this sounds great. In practice, it doesn't get rid of the things that have created so much of this burden.
Yeah, and one thing while Wayne was talking about the whole process, and I was thinking back to the Chevron deference decision that the U.S. Supreme Court had, which is supposed to fix a lot of these things, in that all these bureaucrats in these different divisions, departments, have for years just interpreted the language of ANILCA and everything else the way they wanted to, not just ANILCA, everything to do with everything.
And that's what the deference was too, was to their interpretation, since they're in the agency, and that's gone now.
Right. And that so is, that theoretically should help.
You know, through the years, you know, various administrations and fine people have tried to solve this through the courts. And in my experience as a working biologist, fish and game pretty much made sure that that folks down on the line didn't care about this, didn't know. They figured it would be fixed in the courts. But with the Chevron deference to the agency rule, nothing got fixed. I mean, it was a Einsteinian head pounding to go to court because nothing was going to change. You were not going to get a fair hearing out of the federal courts.
So now Chevron deference is gone, and we have these petitions for rulemaking. One is the entire federal subsistence program, which would still have to comply with ANILCA, but could look radically different, could look radically pared down, and might serve Alaskans better. In addition to that, we have the repeal of the burdensome parks regs that did not account for traditional and cultural uses by Alaska Natives, including some things they wouldn't be able to practice, like denning, things like that, which AFN had wanted repealed when they were originally enacted. Under Chevron deference with this rulemaking, we may finally gain some ground for something that benefits everyone. And in this interpretation, one of the big hangups has been predator management for years and years. There was an EIS that created this board. The board decided around 2006 they were going to have a predator management policy of no-go on their land. And then all these land management documents ended up containing language that says it's incompatible with fill-in-the-blank, refuge values, parks values. When Tim Tawarik was chair of the Federal Subsistence Board in 2010, 2011, he wanted to reverse this. And we got into a big discussion with what, in my interpretation, was an assistant solicitor who had his own bias and said, oh gosh, you couldn't possibly do that without an EIS. And I said, now wait a minute, you enacted it without an EIS. Why do we need an EIS to repeal it? And Tim Tawarik, bless his heart in a good way, not a Southern backhanded compliment, tried and tried, BLM, Bud Cribley, Sue Ensminger on the RAC, so many of the RAC members. The RACs were with us. AFN was with us. A few of the land management agencies were with us, and we just couldn't get past that implanted federal solicitor who said, absolutely not, you can't do this. I had ended up writing a memo for Ted Spraker, who was Board of Game Chair at the Terry, that we did not need this EIS. This is something that we could achieve that I know AFN has supported over the years through this open rulemaking right now.
Oh, yeah, I remember a lot of those details. I don't remember what year was what was the
There's
big
a 2006
one?
Policy that's on the books right now.
So it's been 20 years. 20 years since that happened.
And as Wayne often says, give us your definition of management, because it's not just staring at it while it does its own thing.
That's right. I argue and have for a while, with modicum of increasing momentum growing over years, that what management is in, almost any kind of management you can imagine, is intervening in any established system to produce, maintain, expand, whatever, protect, a predefined benefit. Well, the predefined benefit of federal subsistence is something, but we don't really know what. The predefined benefit for Alaska is set forth in the Constitution, the statutes of the state. So you've got one side kind of making it up as they go along. You've got the other side, the state side, saying, well, this is our job because it's in the Constitution and the laws. And equality is there, so that's what we're fighting for.
And I want to add, so a lot of people that are probably tuning in don't pay as much attention to this stuff as we do. And I think maybe in the back half of the hour, we'll use some examples of how it's going to affect you if you, for example, hunt in 13.
Yeah, there's been some recent actions, and we'll get into what could be coming down the pipe when we come back.
Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
President Trump moving ahead with a project being called Operation Freedom, trying to reopen the Strait of Hormuz as American forces intercept Iranian missiles and drones. They destroyed attack boats targeting commercial shipping. Mr. President.
We just broke every record, and now we're going to take a hit because we have to make a journey down to Iran to take the nuclear weapon.
But gas prices are soaring. AAA says the average price of a gallon of gasoline in the U.S. almost $4.50 a gallon. War Secretary Pete Hegseth says Iran is the clear aggressor, and they've been harassing ships for too long in the strait.
We're not looking for a fight, but Iran also cannot be allowed to block innocent countries and their goods from an international waterway.
A senior Iranian commander, they say American forces would be targeted if they approach and enter the strait. This war again continuing to spark global energy prices. America's listening to Fox News.
It's time for your Alaska News Minute.
Alaska's news source reports the University of Alaska Board of Regents selected Matthew Cooper, former UA General Counsel, as the next president last Friday. Cooper will officially succeed current president Pat Pitney, whose last day is May 21st, on August 3rd, according to a press release. Michelle Rizik, University Relations Vice President, was selected by the board to serve as interim president during the transition period from May 22nd to August 2nd. I am excited and humbled to return to the University of Alaska, and I am grateful to the board and search committee for this opportunity, Cooper said in the press release. I look forward to building on the strong foundation President Pitney has established and to working with the board and university leadership. Cooper served in the UA General Counsel office for 13 years and became general counsel in 2020, remaining in that position for 4 years, according to UA. Cooper also previously served on the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly, the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce, and the KUAC Friends Group.
Streaming live online at KFAR660.com.
Woo, sunshine. Come on, spring. Hey, snowbanks. Fairbanks. Les Nichols here with Fairbanks Nissan. With dry roads around the corner, it's time to start changing your winter tires out. This is the last month of buy three tires, get one for a dollar. I know we're all tired of the puns, but this is a really good deal. And we all know tire change season can be a bit hectic. If you're waiting for service and your shop is telling you June, as in Juno, it might be July, and you don't like waiting in line, schedule your appointment with Fairbanks Nissan today. And yes, we sell Nissans, but we work on all makes, even that one you're driving right now. Speaking of snowbanks, if you have a car that's thawing out in the driveway and you're ready to get rid of it, bring it down to Fairbanks Nissan. We're buying cars. We don't need 100 used cars, but we do need 25 cars before the end of the month. The question isn't who buys the most cars. It's who's going to give you the best number for your car. I'll give you a hint. It's probably Fairbanks Nissan. So come get a great deal on new tires or a seasonal tire change. Let us make you an offer on your old ride that'll put a spring in your step and schedule your speedy service appointment online at FairbanksNissan.com. That's FairbanksNissan.com.
Across Alaska's rivers, runways, trap lines, and trails, there are stories that deserve to be heard. Those stories live on Alaska Tracks. Hosted by wildlife biologist and lifelong outdoorsman Randy Zarnke, Alaska Tracks takes you inside the lives of the people who know this land best. Elders, hunters, bush pilots, and trappers who carry Alaska's traditions forward. Built on an oral history project by the Alaska Trappers Association, each episode blends conversation, storytelling, and firsthand experience, connecting generations, bush and city, past and present. This isn't just a show. It's a living archive and a reminder of what it means to live in the last frontier. Alaska Tracks is proudly presented by KFAR Radio and sponsored by Rod's Saw Shop, Ginger Orem with Crown Real Estate, Interior Welding Extreme North Trailers, and Frontier Outfitters. Alaska Tracks, Saturday at 1:30 p.m. only on KFAR Radio. Stories of the North, told by the people who live them.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at KFARradio.com.
So we're back on Problem Corner. It's the first Tuesday of the month. So we have the Laundry House Gang in studio with Wayne Heimer, Al Barrett, Craig Campo, and I'm Jen Juhas filling in for David Pruse. And Al, you were going to give us some examples of what's happening. There's been some recent decisions to close down hunting opportunities. Some of those in the last year or so have been for conservation. A lot of them haven't.
No, So I mainly was focused on some of the interior closures. And one of the most recent ones was 25D, the Yukon Flats area, where they've closed down all the major navigable waters.
Which are state-owned.
I haven't looked at their language, what they voted on, but they basically put a mile or two corridors on either side of these navigable waterways. And it's deceiving again to the public because when they show the map, they show the drainage as being not accessible to non-federally qualified people. In reality, all Alaskans and all, if hunters, other hunters are allowed, other uses are allowed, you're still used to the normal.
The water, the sandbars, and the normal
high 50 water
feet
means.
From the regular high water mark.
And so, you know, that deceives the public on how they produced those maps and distributed those things. And, again, it wasn't a biological issue. That area is very poor in moose habitat.
We got a phone call you want to take it?
Yeah, sure.
Good morning. You're on Problem Corner.
Oh.
Hello.
Yeah, what I was going to say is you're going to have to register for every hunt you take, I believe. Anywhere. That was my comment on what the changes were. Even if it's a good hunting area or not, or close or far out, you're going to have to register as a way of control, I guess. Okay, thanks.
Oh, I would like to follow up. I didn't know what he meant by you have to register. Was that a state registration or a federal registration?
There you go.
There you go.
Yeah. And to Wayne's point.
to further go on in Unit 25D, which has been a Tier 2, a state Tier 2 hunt, which means it's the highest qualified state subsistence users by a scoring system, you know, get, I believe, about 30 permits.
And when you say highest qualified, I interpret that as the most narrowly qualified.
I said by scoring.
Yes,
so.
Yes.
That would be exclusive.
Exclusive.
And so, you know, the state hunters that would have potentially impacted any kind of hunting in all of 25D, which is a huge area, was 30 Alaskans. And they could have been federally qualified and got the Tier 2 permit. Mm-hmm. So it's up to 30. We don't, you know, I don't know everybody that gets a permit. So, again, that was a social issue. It had nothing to do biologically. So, you know, I don't. The new Federal Subsistence Board is more about, you know, cutting people out.
Well, and the board has constraints that the state board does not. And there was some testimony given, and I, you know, had this playing in the background while I did some other things when they had the testimony for some of these closures. And in the one area, it sounded like the user conflict, which is not the conservation reason, but the user conflict may have been coming from more out-of-state people rather than out-of-local area people, but the federal board didn't have a mechanism to close to non-resident. And they could have used the state board program, and they could have tabled the proposal, and they could have written one to have the state board do that. If they had tabled their proposal, it would have stayed live. And they could have come back to it at their next meeting, which they've done before. The federal board takes fish one year, wildlife the next, and we've seen many cycles where a wildlife holdover is heard during a fish cycle. And so they had that mechanism to them that one of the federal managers, the Fish and Wildlife Service Director, Sarah Borio, did ask on the record, well, when would this come up if we wanted to use it? The state wasn't prepared and thought it was 2 years out. They got a correction close to the end of the meeting and said, oh gosh, it really is this year, and the proposals would be due May 1st. But you're still jostling between these two programs that they aren't matched. They don't have the same mission. They don't have the same availability. And most of the people in the room, had they had that knowledge ahead of time, seemed like they would have leaned towards first closing to non-residents and then allowing the state users to continue to use that area. But it didn't play out that way for social reasons, like you said, Al.
Yeah, and the other problem I have with the federal side is, and I hear during, you know, public testimonies and written comments when I get a chance to listen and read them, is our subsistence needs aren't being met. It's a very common word usage right there. And yet when I quiz managers and ask them when they come before the board of game, or if I see them, you know, in a different meeting situation, and said, how do you quantify if your subsistence needs are being met or not? Because I don't see anywhere in ANILCA that talks about subsistence needs or having to be met. And what are your subsistence needs? And there's no answers to any of those questions. It's just word salad when they're, people are testifying.
Where on the state side, there's measurements.
And that's where they got it from. Because on the state side, we do have a mechanism to collect data and
for amounts necessary for subsistence.
Right.
And that's an actual number that can be, as you say, quantified, but it can be determined instead of a nebulous. I didn't have my fish needs met last year and I didn't fish as much as I should have.
So with that mechanism in place, then sometimes we're able to start eliminating like non-resident use because we can show that the subsistence needs aren't being met. And we can eliminate somebody, a user group, out of there. And first ones generally are always non-resident.
And the state still measures for opportunity. So it's maybe the amount of hunters or fishermen aren't coming out there, but the availability was there.
And let's talk about the area that's going to probably affect most of the people listening, which is Unit 13, right? I mean, that's a lot of people hunt that area. They've closed a section of that off now. Why wouldn't they consider expanding the season for federally qualified users and residents? Why not just extend the season for those folks? That was one argument, instead of cutting off a chunk of it to everybody else.
Is part of it because the animals aren't there?
It's a perceived notion that we're competing against different Alaskans. Yeah. We don't want them. And basically, because it's Unit 13, we're competing with urban folks coming up here, and they deem everybody that's an urban user a sport hunter, yeah. Which is another term that's not found anywhere in the federal mm-hmm. subsistence. It's just a term people like to label other Alaskans.
It's divisive.
Yes, it's divisive.
If you enjoyed it, was it sport even though you ate the meat? Yeah. If you kept the antlers, was it sport even though you ate the meat?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, again, it's just that they have the mechanism to reduce competition.
Well, and then I'm back to predator management if we're talking about 13. So many years ago for bears who eat a lot of moose and caribou, and, you know, back when we were having that discussion, your video surfaced of wolves and bear pulling calves out of the mother on the calving grounds to finally put to bed that this was actually happening. And it was very graphic and didn't circulate widely, but some of the biologists actually got the video. We incentivized bear and wolf hunting under hunting, not predator management. And the ungulates continue to decline, and the bears and wolves are still out there. It was one bear every regulatory 4 years with a tag. Then it was one bear a year with a tag. And people, you couldn't incentivize people to go out there enough. Is please go to Unit 13, take a bear, but everybody wants a moose or a caribou. Mm-hmm.
So let me follow up on that. And again, I'm a Board of Game member, and I'm not representing the board or any of my comments or my personal ones myself. So 3 years ago, approximately, we had, you know, our meeting for what would involve Area 13 or Unit 13. And if I remember correctly, in almost all the subunits of 13, the moose population was decreasing because of habitat and not predation.
Okay.
And so the reason we don't have predation programs going on out there for moose, we have it for caribou. Mm-hmm. They just happen to be in the same unit.
Right.
And so it's not the moose that we have an issue. We have a habitat issue with moose. And we had to lower those population objectives, almost 3 years ago.
Well, this gets back to science-based management, where for a while at the department, I was the lucky duck that got to take the calls from everyone in the lower 48 that was a max contributor to the preservation groups and didn't like predator management or wolf hunting in Alaska, to explain to them, you know how the United States is broken up into 50 states with boundaries. Yes, I do. Okay. Well, we have 26 game management units in Alaska. Do you realize that predator management is only allowed to happen right now, at the time I was taking the calls, in 4 subunits of those 26 game management units, after we've already determined that it's not because of habitat, and it's not because of this, and it's not because of that, and we've set a objective, and that we aren't wiping out all of the wolves in this area? It's only until we've taken this number with this many remaining, and, you know, by the some of them actually were grateful for the education. Others, it was an emotional issue and they didn't want to hear it. But this gets back to the need to be managing based on science. And I know we have to take another break, and we will be back with more specifics on Problem Corner.
More Problem Corner is coming up on KFAR 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
Care for your lawn this summer with help from Husqvarna lawnmowers from the Woodway. Save time as you beautify your yard with Husqvarna lawn tractors and zero-turn mowers powered by Kawasaki. You'll love the quality construction and the perfect cut with heavy-duty fabricated decks and locking differentials. Easy to use. Drop by for a test drive today. The Woodway has the service you need with Husqvarna certified technicians. Care for your home and yard the Alaskan way. The right way. The Woodway.
KFAR Radio is proud to bring you 50-50 Friday. Every Friday at 9 a.m., log on to our website for a half-price offer from a local business. Great deals on restaurants, stores, shops, services, sporting events, and more. It's 50-50 Friday. This week's offer?
Get your glow on for half price. That's the deal for this week's 50-50 Friday from 40 Below Glow. 40 Below Glow is a custom spray tan service. It's a space designed to make you feel confident, polished, and effortlessly put together. Each spray tan application is custom mixed to your exact skin tone. It's tailored for you and only you in a relaxed, judgment-free environment. You will leave with a natural-looking glow. This amazing deal, a $55 gift certificate for half price this Friday.
So log on to KFARradio.com this Friday morning starting at 9 a.m. for this awesome half-price offer. But hurry, as this deal will go fast. It's 50-50 Friday from KFAR.
Looking to make a difference in our community? Join the Greater Fairbanks Community Hospital Foundation for its 58th annual meeting on May 6th at 6 p.m. in the McGowan Room at the Fairbanks Memorial Hospital. This year, they're inviting you to be part of the conversation. Share your ideas, your concerns, and your vision as we work together to strengthen the future of local healthcare. Enjoy light refreshments while connecting with others who care about our community. Mark your calendar for May 6th at 6 p.m. and come help shape what's next.
KFAR weather.
Cloudy skies expected today with a chance of rain showers. High temperatures reach up to 54. Southerly winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Cloudy skies expected tonight. Chance for rain becoming mixed precipitation. Lows dip down to about 33. And that's your weather on KFAR 660 AM and 97.5 FM. I'm meteorologist Derek Height.
And now, more Problem Corner on KFAR Radio, 97.5 FM, 660 AM, and streaming live at kfarradio.com.
So we're back on the air with Problem Corner, and we have the Laundry House Gang in studio because it's the first Tuesday of the month. Again, happy birthday, Governor Mike Dunleavy. We were just leading into some specifics. Let's talk about the pending judge's decision on Mulchatna.
Yeah, well, that, I mean, that, Al, I wanted, you know the
first of all,
details,
what is Mulchatna?
Yeah, what is Mulchatna?
Educate us, Al.
Yeah, Mulchatna was one of Alaska's largest herds. That was right up
of
there.
Of caribou.
Of caribou.
200,000.
It was definitely one of the most popular caribou herds to be hunted or have opportunity to go hunting, and it provided a lot of subsistence resources for rural communities and urban people. And because caribou do what caribou do, they started in a decline. And
what do caribou do, Al? I mean, I'm ready for the woodchuck chuck joke to come with the caribou do.
Caribou, you know, I was fortunate enough to really learn a lot about caribou and caribou management or lack of caribou management from Pat Valkenburg, who's no longer with us, but he was a really good scientist, in my opinion, on trying to understand caribou, which is really difficult. Maybe Dr. Heimer can chime in on that. But anyways, they're not as predictable as deer or moose. And so that makes them very difficult to manage.
And didn't you guide Pat into his caribou studies when you were his supervisor, Wayne?
Supervising Pat was always an adventure. I don't know that I ever supervised him at all. But he was kind of a force of his own.
Didn't you guide him into his calf study?
No.
Oh. Like caribou, hard to manage.
I think I said, what? But the think caribou are very predictable, just not on our lifetime. They do what they do. They have a population strategy that is seemingly conservative, but when they reach a certain density, they become uncontrollable. You can nibble off whatever you want around the edges if you're a wolf, but they're going to do what they're going to do. They're going to eat up the range, or something's going to go wrong. Then they're going to migrate, going to go someplace and do it all over again in the course of 150 years. So they are not like critters that are predictable, except in the geological time period.
Well, I can predict that they will come into camp, if we fly in, they will come into camp every first day that I'm there and be gone for the rest of the trip. they will walk right up and say hi that first day.
Carry white paper plates in the boat. You're sitting on the edge of the river in a boat. You can wave. You see the caribou kind of crossing the river a little far off. You just wave the white plate. They start walking over to you. Like my buddy that I hunt with says, you know, it's got to be terrible to be two things, stupid and delicious at the same time.
Well, we were stuck in a hailstorm up in the Brooks a few years ago. It was the type of thing where we were just waiting to leave. We did not, at this point, we didn't want to take anything with us. If the weather breaks, we need to be able to go. And they just kept, you know, the fog was only really from here to the door across the hallway here that we could see. We'd wake up, you know, pee, check the tie downs, eat something, hunker down in the tent again. They just kept walking through like, hey, you come in with us? It was like, no, move along. Yeah.
Yeah. So as far as concerning with the herd, so yeah, it was just recently heard, I believe last Friday, there was oral arguments, and it was one of the NGOs wanting an injunction put on the state so they would stop shooting grizzly bears and black bears on the cabin grounds.
Can we back up just a little? Herd was very big. It was very important. It got very small.
15,000.
And eventually figured out that the reason it was not doing well was bear predation, primarily a monster area, but they found the bears were only living in a short place. Mm. Department of Fish and Game went in there where the good place was. They shot a lot of bears for a couple of years, and somebody sued. Back to you, Al.
Yeah, no, that's a good summary. That's right.
Well, and the somebody who sued, I get real wonky about semantics, as do some of the folks in this room.
Alaska Wildlife Alliance, right?
Right, so, you know, I'm tired of hearing groups like SCI and AOC being referred to as hunting groups when they are in fact conservation groups. Yep. And I'm tired of seeing anti-hunting social groups being referred to as conservation groups, which they are not.
All right.
And so this lady sued.
Yeah. So she sued on behalf of an NGO, and their basic, when I listened to the oral arguments on Friday, their basic complaint was is the department didn't have population numbers of bears in the area, and without that, we don't know if the harvest that we've already taken, 196 bears approximately, is that too high, is that enough, or is that not enough, because we don't have hard solid numbers on bears. And you know, unfortunately, that's not an uncommon problem in the state of Alaska, is we have a very, very hard time estimating, you know, bear populations in any one geographic location. What we did know, what the department did know and tell us at board meetings, is we know that the bears that are visiting this little postage stamp of this huge area is the bears are there primarily feeding on newborn calves. Mm-hmm. And we've harvested 2 years out there now, and like we said, we got just under 200 bears have been removed from that site.
Almost on brown
and
bears.
We've seen a basically almost a 20% increase in survivability and population increase.
Shocking.
Wow.
Yeah. So why isn't that enough? Why isn't that enough reason to continue the program?
Well, and the program should only continue until the objective is met that was set for the program. That's how the programs are.
Right.
But yeah. See, the challenge is in the numbers. You know, the suing lady says you don't know the numbers. Well, you can't know the numbers in any practical way.
They're really hard to find. They go to sleep all winter, you can't see them.
But you know, we've reached the point where we have such confidence in our ability to know numbers that it confuses us. This last winter was awful for a lot of things, maybe sheep in the mountains.
Humans.
Well, we can't prove it was awful, but if it were awful, and if there were wolves and coyotes out there, we'd be smart to go kill them whether we knew it or knew it was awful for them or not. It's just a matter of managing environmental resistance to population growth without having to quantify it first. If we make a big mistake with the bears, it's no problem. We'll stop killing them. They'll be back. So
same with the wolves.
Right? Yeah, same with the hail. They'll be back.
They breed like bears and wolves.
Yeah.
So it's, we get hamstrung by our confidence in quantitative stuff and the expectation that we can know stuff we can't know.
Well, you said at the break, it's a language problem, not a practice problem.
I think that's true. You know, the whole federal subsistence industry, which is how I refer to it, is based on semantics. You know, is the state in compliance by letting everybody be a subsistence user, or what is it out of compliance because it's not just rural residents? That's the rub. And trying to amend that sow's ear into a silk purse, I don't think it'll work. Just do it the way it has always been done. Feds own the habitat and manage the habitat. State owns the critters and manages the critters. That's been that way at the United States since 100 years.
So David usually wraps up our Laundry House Gang with each of us making a recommendation for things to go and do. So what's on your list, Mr. Campo?
I'm changing the seats in my boat. I'm getting my boat cleaned up and ready for my first run up the Goodpaster River. There's been a terrible log jam up at around 65 Mile, and it's when the water's low, there's no getting through it.
Oh,
and
boy.
Last year was the first year we had to shuttle with a little boat beyond there to our camp. You know, we had to leave a little 14-footer.
Unless
up
you've
there
got a special tunnel.
You get an airboat or something. But I'm telling you, it's it's really been a mess. Well, it sounds like there was some activity up there that might actually help get rid of that stuff, both nature and otherwise. Yeah.
Okay.
Tannery.
Albert.
Oh, I don't have anything planned for this weekend. Still got one little project to finish up at the house that I'm going to try to get done and take it easy, I think.
Wow.
And a lot of game and fish processing?
Oh, yeah. I'm always, I'm going to be making a new batch of fish this week. And we have pickled salmon down there if you want to come down and try that. It's really excellent. And, the first taste is free.
That's how they get you hooked?
Yes.
You're the pickled salmon dealer?
Yeah.
Tell them again where to get it.
From Captain Spitzer's captive audience. You always give the first sample out free.
Interior fish process.
Wayne.
I'm going to emulate Al and take it easy. I'm in a recovery mode from having had my food processor replumbed. And I'm kind of taking it easy and looking forward to non-soft food.
Okay. You can go down and get that first bite free of the pickled salmon.
Yeah, there you go. Pickled salmon. It's soft food, I think.
Well, I'm going to recommend, there are so many classes coming your way. There's one at TVSA tomorrow for bears. There's the Women Go Hunting is coming up here, along with the Carrie Ann Mueller has the Women's Hunting and Fishing classes. Just go online, look at ADF&G, the department. You go to State of Alaska, go to the ADF&G page, go to education, and then you can sort by what's happening in Fairbanks. You can also find some resources online on Facebook or research Women Go Hunting or Women Hunting and Fishing Alaska, because there's a whole bunch of classes coming our way, some during the daytime, some in the evening, some on the weekends. Learn how to shoot, prepare the game that you've captured, safety, rifle, pistol, shotgun, and some fun activities. Any parting words?
I would just like to remind people when they hunt this year, if you're moose hunting or caribou hunting, you're kind of obligated to, if you get a chance to take a predator. It's your little thing you're doing to add to.
Some of our village friends have said that repeatedly, that, you know, when we talk about traditional ecological knowledge and native ways of living, that they've said when you go out there and get a moose or a caribou, you're supposed to take a wolf or a bear.
Yep. Do your part. Your fair share.
Your voice. Your station. This is KFAR Radio, Fairbanks.